Thank you. Be seated.
This morning, the court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. George Alexander versus Linda's Boutique from Tom Green County and the 3rd Appellate Judicial District. Garland Community Hospital versus Debbie Rose from Dallas County and the 5th Appellate Judicial District. And Southwest Bank versus Information Support Concept of Tarrant County and the 2nd Appellate Judicial District. In each matter, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. Petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. These arguments are being taped, and you may purchase a copy of a tape of any argument for a nominal fee from our clerk. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and complete these arguments before the lunch break. The court is ready to hear arguments from petitioner in Alexander versus Lindos.
May it please the court, Mr. Mike Young will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. It's a privilege and honor to be here. I will briefly state what I think are the key issues that are before the court today. There are two Supreme Court opinions that consider the issues that are before the court. Briefly stated, the opinions are the Villarreal opinion and the General Electric opinion. This is a case that considers a dismissal for want of prosecution pursuant to 165A1 rules of procedure, where a party fails to attend a dismissal hearing. That was the result of this case. An order of dismissal was entered and was sent to the counsel. There are three particular documents in the record that I've included in my petition for review, which are the key documents that need to be reviewed to determine whether there was error on the face of the record in this restricted appeal.
In the order setting the scheduling conference, it references an attachment or attached list. Is that part of the record or not?
It is part of the record. There's an attachment that lists several cases that were part of the scheduling conference mail out, and Zinner's daughter's case was on that list. I have a copy of that if you would like to see it at some point.
Is there evidence that that order setting scheduling conference was sent or received?
I don't think there's any specific evidence in the record of a mailing of it, other than it is in the record. It was among the list of cases that were sent an order setting scheduling conference, but there's no affirmative record of mailing in the record.
Let me ask you, the notice said, and I'm reading it, failure to appear without excuse will result in dismissal of the case or want of prosecution or entering sanctions or other orders as the court deems appropriate. Does this case turn on whether we consider this hearing turned into a dismissal hearing or not?
Yes, I think it's key that is this a dismissal hearing, and also whether or not there was a notice and opportunity to be heard at this dismissal hearing, and whether or not the notice provided the court's intention to dismiss.
And if we were to interpret that language as not appropriately setting a dismissal hearing, then would you lose?
Yes, I think so.
Also, do you know what the practice is in other counties?
I've reviewed cases that have similar types of practices. I think they vary from county to county. I think that it's ordinary, you know, when we talk about the record, I think it's ordinarily not in the record that mailing has been affirmatively done in the case. With respect to dismissal hearings, I think that there's a lot of different practices. I think in the Villarreal case, there's a good example of a dismissal hearing that was properly noticed, but the case considered whether or not the party's attendance at the hearing was going to allow the court to dismiss even though they attended. In this case, it's different because even though there was the same type of notice, which was proper notice of a dismissal hearing, the opportunity was provided for a dismissal hearing, but the party did not attend, and so that failure to attend is the key reason in this case that is distinguishable from the Villarreal opinion.
But do you know in practice whether if a lawyer is not here for trial or for a hearing of some sort, that it is automatic for the judge to go ahead and dismiss the case, or if it's the plaintiff's lawyer? Or do you get is there another hearing set, or how does it work in the various, this out of Tom Green County, but you're practicing in Travis County, I just wonder if you
right.
know how
I,
it works.
I've been up against this myself at a dismissal hearing here in Travis County. And I was in the same situation in that I did not know that it happened until after the fact. I don't believe I was actually provided notice, but the time period had elapsed for the judgment, but it was within 90 days of the plenary jurisdiction of the trial court, so I filed a motion to reinstate the case, and we had a hearing on it, and the case was reinstated. In this case, it's very important that a motion for reinstate was not heard, because it makes an absence of the record to show any reason for the failure to attend, and there has to be a finding and a motion to reinstate that it's either intentional, not intentional, or not the result of conscious indifference, and we don't have that here because there's no motion to reinstate.
Under your construction of Rule 165A, a court could put that tagline that if you don't show up to, for example, discovery hearing, motion to compel answers to interrogatories, there could be a tagline saying if you fail to appear, your case is subject to either dismissal, sanction, or some other appropriate remedy. So under your construction, if that tagline is in any order, then the hearing becomes a dismissal hearing in every case if the person, if the party doesn't show. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that is correct. The rule says that any hearing, and I think it's up to the trial court's discretion how they want to control their docket. If they want to apply it like that, that's fine. I think the ordinary practice is that they try to control their docket with scheduling conferences to maintain the flow of their cases, and so it's more ordinary to see it in this type of a situation.
But in a large variety of cases, then, a whole person's claim could be dismissed because of a blowout in a tire, for example, without another attempt to explain to the court why their absence was compelled for some reason. And just to go further, doesn't the rule contemplate a separate hearing that is labeled a dismissal hearing, not one for sanctions, not one for other appropriate remedies, but one that is geared specifically at dismissing the case for not prosecuting?
To address the second point, the court is to provide under 165A1 an opportunity to be heard, and failure to appear will result in dismissal. The opportunity to then explain why you have failed to appear is provided in the motion to reinstate process, which is 165A3. It's redundant to require a 165A1 to have an oral hearing when in the rule itself it says failure to appear at a hearing could result in dismissal. And so it's contemplating that there's not going to be an oral argument or a presentation of oral arguments.
But 165A says notice of the court's intention to dismiss and the date and place of the dismissal hearing shall be sent to each attorney of record. Why wouldn't a counsel, for example, in this case, why couldn't they consider the possibility of sanctions as what the court had in mind in this scheduling order? It wasn't specifically notice to dismiss alone. It was dismissal, it was sanctions, it was other appropriate remedies. What puts the counsel in this case on notice that if they don't come, that the sanction will be the death penalty, in effect?
Well, I think that the wording of the court's notice in this case provided counsel notice that they were, if they didn't show up at the hearing, there was the threat of dismissal. And I think that in and of itself creates the intention to dismiss. Whether or not there's other remedies that are possible, if they want to take the risk it's not going to be dismissed, they've been forewarned.
Any
I could continue. I think one of the issues here that's been raised, the Court of Appeals specifically held that there was not a notice of a dismissal hearing and that there was not, in fact, a dismissal hearing. There's additional issues before this court, and I'm asking the court to render a decision on those issues that the Court of Appeals did not consider, which is the notice of the order of dismissal. There's an indication on there that it was sent to the counsel of record. There's been a contention in the response that the failure to include a mailing address is somehow making that a defective notice, but I would refer the court to the General Electric opinion, which says that the courts do not have an affirmative duty to include the mailing information in the record. Counsel has cited a case in which there was a notice of order of dismissal which showed an incorrect address, and in addition there were affidavits presented to the court pursuant to the motion to reinstate procedure, which allowed the court that found that the incorrect address was inadequate notice of the order of dismissal. In this case, we don't have that situation because it is an error on the face of the record that we're looking at. There are no affidavits to consider because there was no motion to reinstate. The General Electric case should govern this case. And if there are any other questions that the court would like to entertain, I'd be happy to address them. Otherwise, I'm finished.
The rule seems to provide that there is there are two steps. One is the hearing or trial, and the other is the dismissal hearing. And here, those two were combined into one. You don't see any problem with that combination.
I'm sorry.
The order seems to say, in the first instance, it says that a case may be dismissed for want of prosecution on failure of a party seeking affirmative relief to appear for any hearing or trial of which the party had notice. So here the hearing had to do with the scheduling conference. And then the rule later says, notice of the court's intention to dismiss and the date and place of the dismissal hearing shall be sent to each attorney of record. It seems to me that contemplates two hearings, in effect. One, the hearing on whatever the matter was, discovery, scheduling, et cetera, and then a second hearing to consider dismissing the case for want of prosecution. Two separate hearings. This case, those two were combined in one. You don't see any problem with combining those two.
I don't see a problem with combining the two. I think it is a construction of this language that the court could consider. However, it does, as you read it, it seems to indicate that the dismissal hearing that they're referring to is mentioned right before this language about failing to attend at any hearing could result in dismissal. I think that's saying that hearing is the dismissal hearing. If you fail to attend and you're told it's going to be dismissed, if you fail to attend, that is the dismissal hearing.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument and respond.
May it please the court, Mr. Russell Bowman will now present argument for the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. As with opposing counsel, it is a pleasure to be here. It's the first time I've had a chance to be before the court. Wish it were under different circumstances, but be that as it may. As far as the issues that are raised by this particular case, the way I see it, it's twofold. One, it being a restricted appeal. The key, and really it's the only point that's been disputed between the parties, is whether there is error apparent on the face of the record so as to justify reinstating the case and reversing the trial court's dismissal of the case for want of prosecution. In that regard, as I believe the Court of Appeals opinion showed, there's two different aspects to that I believe would make the trial court's dismissal improper. One is the failure to give adequate notice of the court's intention to dismiss the lawsuit.
Let me ask you about that one.
Yes, ma'am.
You don't dispute that a hearing could be more than one type of hearing. I mean, that you can have a scheduling conference and a dismissal hearing all in one.
I suppose you could, Your Honor. I've never seen that, but I believe what the rule is contemplating is a party fails to appear for a particular hearing or trial, and then the rule is set up so as to satisfy due process to have a separate hearing to determine the good cause, whether good cause exists for not appearing.
You'd say due process would require a separate then notice?
Yes, Your
Honor. Not necessarily a separate hearing.
I believe it would require both, Your Honor. As an example, I've seen some, I believe Dallas County still does it this way, issues a trial setting in a case, and in their typical standard trial notice, it'll say the failure to appear could result in your lawsuit being dismissed or default judgment being rendered against you, whether you're complaining or defending. And, as an example, say it's a case in Dallas. Seems like it's happening more and more where you're on your way to work and you're either in an accident or stuck in on the freeway behind one that's blocking traffic. And say in that scenario, you don't make it there, 9 o'clock comes, you don't show up, so the trial judge dismisses your lawsuit. Well, the accident, for example, in a hypothetical, may have given you the good cause to show why you didn't appear, which is why it would be...
But that seems to me a separate question. What if the notice in this case had said, if you don't appear, your case could be dismissed, and if you don't appear at 9 o'clock, this will turn into a dismissal hearing under 165A. Do you think that would satisfy the notice in hearing?
I don't believe it would, Your Honor, because, again, I believe it's important, and I believe that's why the rule is phrased like it is, to have that separate second hearing, because basically you're going to be getting your case dismissed for not appearing for that initial hearing that was set up.
But under your construction rule, you really have to have three separate hearings. Under your construction, you'd have to have the hearing that was missed, then you'd have to have a separate hearing to discuss whether it should be dismissed, and then you would also have to have a reinstatement hearing, because the rule says if you file a motion to reinstate, the trial court shall set it for hearing. It's not optional, so that you would have, before a trial court can dismiss a case, you'd have to have three separate hearings.
Well, you could, Your Honor, but there's, and I don't have the actual case size, but I know there's several cases that say if you're able to have the motion to reinstate, which again has the same evidentiary burden, that would satisfy the due process that the notice of intent to dismiss and having a hearing on that issue deals with.
But I'm just saying the way you construe the rule, the trial court can't dismiss at the first 165A hearing. They have to say, all right, you didn't show up. Then they have to have a separate hearing on whether you're going to be dismissed or not. And then they have to have a third hearing if you file a motion to reinstate. It seems to me that that's a lot of overkill in the way you read the rules.
Well, and I think on that, Your Honor, the reason the rule's set up that way, and I believe under that scenario would require that, is cases ought to be decided on the merits, not because of some what may be an excused reason why a party or their attorney failed to appear for a particular hearing. I think that is why.
Why do we need two hearings on that same issue? Because under your construction of the rule, the second hearing would be determined, why didn't you show up at the hearing, and should I dismiss or not? And then the motion to reinstate, I would assume, would cover exactly the same ground. So
I believe it probably would cover the same grounds, Your Honor. But as far as having that additional hearing, the way the rule is written, it just would have to be done. And I think the reason why the rule shows that a second hearing would be required is there's been some decisions from this court dealing with the section of Rule 165 requiring a hearing on the motion for restatement. That part of the rule, it reads that if a motion is filed, the court shall set that motion for hearing and send notice out to the parties of the date and place for the hearing on that motion. And in this court's decisions of Thornton, that's 815 Southwestern 2nd 550, and Gulf Coast Investment Corporation, 754 Southwestern 2nd 152, This court held that that part of the rule and that language ever requires that a hearing be had if a motion for reinstatement is filed, and that the failure to have such a hearing on that motion would require that any denial of it be reversed and remanded. And if you look at the part of Rule 165 dealing in the first paragraph with dismissing a lawsuit, it's again got the same language dealing with the court shall send notice to the parties of a date and place for the dismissal hearing. Again, using the same type language, which this court has found requires that you have a hearing on that. So I think based on that, if a party fails to appear at a trial or a hearing, that the rule and this court's decision in Villarreal requires that there be a separate hearing to give the party a chance to show good cause why they failed to appear at the particular hearing.
Let me ask you about your affidavit. It seems to me that you're very careful not to say that there wasn't notice of this hearing in your file. I take it from reading between the lines that there was a notice of the hearing in your file once you found the file.
I didn't have one in my file, Your Honor, but I couldn't state under oath that one wasn't sent because the only attorney of record on the case was Frank Webb. I myself was never copied on any notice and couldn't find one in the file, so I could not say, you know, with certainty required that one was actually sent and received. I just couldn't find one in my particular file. So I'm not saying one wasn't sent. I just didn't have one. But even that aside, Your Honor, the notice would not be adequate notice of the court's intent to dismiss, because what it's advising of is the possibility of a dismissal, because it mentions that the case may be dismissed for the failure to appear, or there may be sanctions or other orders which the court may deem appropriate. And as this court noted in Villarreal, the dismissal notice in that case, the court found it didn't give adequate notice of the intent to dismiss because it was merely informing the parties of a possible dismissal, which is the same thing with this order, Your Honor. So
you're from Dallas County.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you alluded earlier to common practice there of including in notices, trial notices, for example, a statement that if you don't show up, the case will either be dismissed or default may be taken. And it's your experience that that's routine in the courts of Dallas County or not?
Yes, Your Honor. What I typically get in the cases I get in Dallas County that are set for trial, it's usually a letter addressed to the attorney saying trial date, and it's usually got two little brackets, one jury trial or non-jury trial, depending on if it's jury trial or not. Has the date in there, and then it'll have a standard form paragraph down towards the end that says something to the effect of failure to appear will result in the dismissal of the case if you're the plaintiff, or possibility of a default judgment if you're the defendant. It's some form of language that effect.
And is it your experience also that if you're the plaintiff and you don't show up, that's what the judge does? He goes ahead and dismisses the case, or does he have another hearing?
Fortunately, Your Honor, I've never had to experience that to be able to tell you firsthand. About the closest I've seen is it was when Judge Godbee was on the court there in the 160th. He would typically set up scheduling conferences. He'd pick, I think, a certain day of the week that he'd do that. And he'd have the lawyers see if they have an agreed set of dates to submit. And, you know, there'd probably be 20 cases set on his docket that morning to do that. And I'd seen some where one of the lawyers hadn't showed up for whatever reason. And if my memory's correct, I think basically what he would do is have them be put on the dismissal docket, send out some notice. And I've seen similar things happen in federal court cases, Your Honor, where, say, a lawyer wouldn't appear for a case management conference or fail to submit a joint report about scheduling deadlines or something like that. And typically what the federal court would do is just send an order after that, setting a rule to show cause, hearing why, you know, if you're the plaintiff, the case should be dismissed, or if you're the defendant, why you shouldn't have your pleading struck, something to that effect. And I think that's exactly what Rule 165 and this court's ruling in Billy Royale are trying to accomplish, is to give the party the chance where if there is some good cause why the party failed to appear.
And you say ordinarily, or it's possible for that to be done at the hearing on the motion to reinstate, but it really should be done at a hearing under Rule 165A.
Yes, Your Honor. And another reason for that, should the motion to reinstate would create, if one is filed and set for hearing, a second hearing on the matter. But again, I think that's to help satisfy due process requirements, to make sure that a party's rights to have his day in court, and which is guaranteed to us under the Constitution, protected and honored, to hopefully get a case to be decided on its merits.
Mr. Bowman,
yes, sir.
In your experience in Dallas County, how many notices do the courts actually prepare and send out? In other words, isn't it the case that a large majority of notices of hearings are sent by the parties, and the courts only send notices for very important hearings, like the scheduling conference and the trial setting?
Yes, in Dallas County, Your Honor, typically you'll get perhaps a notice of a scheduling conference, notice of a trial setting, and then notice of your case being on a dismissal docket for a particular day.
So this dismissal language is only on notices the court prepares for these very important settings?
At least in Dallas County, the only one I've seen that on is on a notice of trial setting.
Under your theory, other than a hearing set specifically for dismissal under 165A, could a trial judge ever dismiss a case for failure of counsel to appear?
I believe, just based on a party's simple failure to appear, that no, he couldn't dismiss it at that point.
And it doesn't matter how specific or how strict the notice that was received, the language in that notice is.
Yeah, I believe not, Your Honor, because of the requirement in the rule about the court having to send notice of a specific date and place for a dismissal hearing, so as to get the party.
Well, let me understand that. If a party intentionally does not appear at a hearing, you're saying that the court can't then set a dismissal hearing for want of prosecution under Rule 165A?
By that, you're talking about intentionally arguing?
Yeah, the party doesn't appear, has no good excuse. Can the court at that point set a dismissal hearing with notice under 165A to dismiss for want of prosecution?
Yes.
So a court can dismiss if a party has not appeared when ordered to do so, if there is a separate 165A dismissal hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. Like under that scenario that you gave, say the party failed to appear and it was intentional, as you say. The court sets a hearing, party's attorney shows up and has no excuse. It just comes out as intentional. At that point, I think the court can properly dismiss the case under Rule 165 or its inherent authority to be able to dismiss a case. And under that scenario, you've also satisfied due process concerns because you've given the party a chance to explain why they failed to appear. They didn't show good cause, so their lawsuit can and should be properly dismissed.
And then you'd have to have a third hearing on motion to reinstate.
If they file a motion to reinstate. But I would imagine under that scenario, Your Honor, it ought to be a fairly short hearing.
Well, counsel, explain problems with the scenario whereby a 165A hearing could be part of a scheduling conference hearing if the notice so provides. In other words, if it says something like what the order here said, attendance is mandatory in all caps and bold, failure to appear without excuse will result in dismissal or sanctions or other orders, and it says you're coming for purposes of setting a schedule, the party doesn't show up, the case is dismissed, can the due process concerns you're talking about be addressed in the motion to reinstate? Of course, the scenario I've set out for you to comment on, hypothetically, is a scenario where the notice can satisfy both purposes, and a hearing can satisfy both purposes. What's wrong with having the due process concerns addressed in the motion to reinstate?
As far as addressing the due process concerns there, none, provided the party can have the opportunity to file a motion to reinstate, which I think is another reason why the rule is written like it is, Your Honor, is it gives that party basically a second separate opportunity to be able to set forth and show good cause why they failed to appear at the initial hearing or trial that prompted the dismissal order to be entered.
Apart from this missed hearing, is this a case in which there was no prosecution of the lawsuit? In other words, had the case been progressing, discovery answered,
Yes, Your Honor. As far as what the appeal record will show, it'll show an amended petition was filed. And as far as written discovery, even though that's not part of the record, interrogatories, requests for production have been exchanged and answered. So this wasn't like what you might see on some cases where a petition's filed and answers filed, and you don't see anything going on with the lawsuit for 15 months with no activity. This was simply all centered on the scheduling conference that was held on March the 6th of 2000.
What's your response to the argument that the motion to reinstate cures any problem about due process?
Well, if a party's able to file and argue and have a hearing on a motion to reinstate, there are cases that say even though the trial court didn't have a dismissal hearing, that satisfies the due process concerns. In this case, the problem is there was no motion to reinstate because the parties, or the plaintiff didn't learn of the dismissal of the lawsuit until after the time limit had expired to file a motion to reinstate. And on that point, Your Honor, opposing counsel had mentioned in his argument about how a motion to reinstate could have been filed in this case. Rule 306A does give a party an extended time in which to file either a notice of appeal or a motion to reinstate, provided that the party doesn't receive notice of the judgment more than 90 days from the date it was signed. Once that happens, even if you find out about it on the 92nd day, for example, you can't file a motion to reinstate anymore, and that's this court's opinion in Levitt v. Adams, 850 Southwestern 2nd, 469. So as a result, that motion to reinstate remedy was simply not available in this particular case.
Does the record reflect whether or not there's a jury request in the record? I can look it up, but
I try to be prepared for everything I possibly could today, Your Honor. I believe a jury was requested, but I'd have to look at the original petition to tell you. I believe it was.
Let me just make sure I understand your position. You would say that never can a dismissal notice be included in the scheduling order?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, because of the way the rule is structured, it says to require a separate hearing on that issue.
I don't see separate in the rule. It just says there has to be notice of intent to dismiss and at the dismissal hearing. And nowhere does it say they have to be separate things. In other words, if the scheduling conference notice said, if you don't show up, it can be dismissed, and we're going to put you on the dismissal docket if you don't show up an hour later, under your theory, the notice ab initio would be defective because it's notice of two different things in one notice.
Well, I believe, again, Your Honor, I think it would require something separate because basically you'll be getting your case dismissed right then and there for failing to appear at that particular hearing or trial that is causing the dismissal to be entered. It simply won't be giving you the opportunity to show good cause to the trial court before your case is dismissed why you failed to appear. So I think in response to your question, yes, it would require, I believe in all cases, a separate hearing so as to give the party a chance to show good cause for the failure to appear before their lawsuit gets dismissed.
Any other questions? One other question. The rule uses requires that notice be given of the place of the dismissal hearing. That's kind of unusual. Where's it going to be except at the courthouse?
I couldn't think. I guess the judge could order us to appear wherever he wanted, but it is rather strange. But that same language is used further in the rule, Your Honor, dealing with the hearing on the motion for reinstatement. And basically the decisions from this court that I mentioned earlier just interpret that language as requiring a separate hearing in a particular matter.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is my rebuttal time. I don't have really any additional arguments to present to the court. I would encourage the court to take a rather straightforward reading of the rules, which allow the trial court to control its dockets via scheduling conferences, to require the attendance of attorneys by threatening to dismiss their case, and then if there's some problem with that, the attorneys should have a hearing on motion to reinstate to discuss why if they have an excuse for not showing up.
Mr. Young, assume your interpretation of Rule 165A is correct, that a notice can serve two purposes and a hearing can serve two purposes, one being dismissal. In this case, with no evidence that the notice setting the scheduling conference from the court was sent and an affidavit disputing that it was received, assuming that the requirement that error be apparent on the face of the record in a restricted appeal, assuming that requirement applies, is it necessary that there be some evidence that the notice was sent or received in order for you to be successful? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I think, no, that doesn't have to be affirmative proof in the record, in the trial court record, that notice was sent. I think General Electric versus Falcon Ridge addresses that issue well. It is not an ordinary practice of trial courts to provide that type of information in the record.
And that may be so. I won't dispute with you on that point at this point. But if there's affirmative evidence that it was not received, there to be error apparent on the face of the record, should there be some evidence that it was at least sent?
But, Your Honor, there is no evidence in the face of the record that it was not received. That's my first point. If there is an affidavit before this court, it was not in the trial court record and it was not before the trial court. And I think on that basis, there is no evidence in the record that it was not received.
Well, the affidavit was signed February 5th. Was that it was never brought to the trial court's attention or the Court of Appeals?
Correct.
So there's no evidence that the notice was sent in the record, no evidence that it was received in the record, and no evidence disputing that the notice was received in the record. No evidence of any of that in this court's record, is your understanding?
Correct, and that's the same situation in general.
You agree, I take it, that, or maybe you don't, that if the case had been dismissed and there has been no hearing, if you want a hearing and you ask for a hearing, you're entitled to a hearing. Not just because of the rule, but would that be a requirement of due process, or is it just a requirement of rule?
If I understand your question, I think that the motion to reinstate is that request for a hearing on the merits of the dismissal and the failure to attend.
Was there a hearing?
Was there a motion to reinstate hearing?
No, but just was there a hearing?
There was a hearing in that the court had all the cases before it, had a docket call where they considered the scheduling of the cases, and when the party didn't attend, then it resulted in dismissal.
That's what the record shows, that the scheduled event occurred that day. No indication that a hearing?
Correct, yes.
There's no indication?
There's an indication that in the docket control, in the docket sheet, that the March 6th scheduling conference did occur, and at that time it was noted on the docket sheet that there was no the failure to attend and that it resulted in dismissal.
And that there was a hearing?
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
concludes the argument in the first cause. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.